मम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य काय चक्षुरुन्मितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. नमः ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने. नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादि पश्चात्यदेशचारिणे जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवाचारि गौर भक्तवृंद. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. I'll repeat for the sake of the recording that tonight we're going to hear chapter 14 of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is one of the most important chapters in the Bhagavatam, as it gives the complete Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta and brings the conclusion that our Sampradaya has brought to the world, which is Ete Chamsa Kalapumsam Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in order to fix one's mind on Krishna, and Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru, one must have a clear conception of who Krishna is. And when one does, then it becomes very easy to think of Krishna. So this is just after Lord Brahma has discovered that his power is completely dependent on Krishna, and although he had some idea that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when even a tiny fraction of his power was revealed to Brahma, Brahma became overwhelmed, fell at the lotus feet of Krishna, placed his heads, four of them, at Krishna's lotus feet, and then he began to offer these prayers. Chapter 14, Prayers Offered by Lord Brahma to Lord Krishna. Brahma said, "My dear Lord, you are the only worshipable Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, I am offering my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you. Your bodily features are the color of clouds filled with water. You are glittering with a silver electric aura emanating from your yellow garments. Let me offer my respectful repeated obeisances unto the son of Maharaj Nanda, who is standing before me with conch shell earrings and a peacock feather on his head. His face is beautiful. He is wearing a helmet and is garlanded by forest flowers, and he stands with a morsel of food in his hand. He is decorated with a cane, a buffalo horn, bugle, and a flute. He stands before me with small lotus feet. My dear Lord, people may say that I am the master of all Vedic knowledge, and I am supposed to be the creator of this universe. But it has been proved now that I cannot understand you who are present before me just like a child. You are playing with your boyfriends and calves, which might imply that you do not even have sufficient education. You are appearing just like a village boy, carrying your food in hand and searching for your calves. And yet, there is so much difference between your body and mine that I cannot estimate the potency of your body. As I have already stated in the Brahma Samhita, your body is not material. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that the body of the Lord is all spiritual. There is no difference between the Lord's body and his self. Each limb of his body can perform the actions of all others. The Lord can see with his hands, he can hear with his eyes, he can accept offerings with his legs, and he can create with his mouth." Brahma continued, "Your appearance as a cowherd child is for the benefit of the devotees, and although I have committed an offense at your lotus feet by stealing away your boys and calves, I can understand that you have bestowed your mercy upon me. This shows your transcendental quality of being very affectionate toward your devotees. But in spite of your great affection for me, I cannot estimate the potency of your bodily activities. It is to be understood that when I, Lord Brahma, the Supreme Personality of this universe, cannot estimate the childlike body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then what to speak of others? And if I cannot estimate the spiritual potency of your childlike body, then what can I understand about your transcendental pastimes? Therefore, as it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, anyone who can understand the little of the transcendental pastimes, appearance and disappearance of the Lord becomes immediately eligible to enter into the kingdom of God after quitting the material body. This statement is confirmed in the Vedas, where it is stated, simply by understanding the Supreme Personality of God, that one can overcome the chain of repeated birth and death. I therefore recommend that people should not try to understand you by their speculative knowledge. The best process for understanding you is to submissively give up the speculative process and try to hear about you, either from yourself, as you have given statements in the Bhagavad Gita and many similar scriptures, or from a realized soul who has taken shelter at your lotus feet. One has to hear from a devotee without speculation. One does not even need to change his worldly position. He simply has to hear your message. Although you are not understandable by the material senses, simply by hearing about you, one can gradually conquer the nescience of misunderstanding. By your own grace only, you become revealed to a devotee. You are unconquerable by any other means. Speculative knowledge without any trace of devotional service is simply a useless waste of time in the search for you. Devotional service is so important that even a little attempt can raise one to the highest perfectional platform. One should not, therefore, neglect this auspicious process of devotional service and take to the speculative method. By the speculative method, one may gain partial knowledge of your cosmic manifestation, but it is not possible to understand you, the origin of everything. The attempt of persons who are interested only in speculative knowledge is simply wasted labor, like the labor of a person who attempts to gain something by beating an empty husk of rice paddy. A little quantity of paddy can be husked by the grinding wheel, and one can gain some grains of rice. But if the skin of the paddy has already been beaten by the grinding wheel, there is no further gain in beating even a huge quantity of the husk. It is simply useless labor. My dear Lord, there are many instances in the history of human society where a person, after failing to achieve the transcendental platform, engage himself in devotional service with his body, mind, and words, and thus attain the highest perfectional state of entering into your abode. The process of understanding you by speculation or mystic meditation are all useless without devotional service. One should therefore engage himself in your devotional service even in his worldly activities, and one should always keep himself near you by the process of hearing and chanting your transcendental glories. Simply by being attached to hearing and chanting your glories, one can attain the highest perfectional stage of entering into your kingdom. If a person, therefore, always keeps in touch with you by hearing and chanting your glories and offers the results of his work for your satisfaction only, he very easily and happily attains entrance into your supreme abode. You are realizable by persons who have cleansed their hearts of all contamination. This cleansing of the heart is made possible by chanting and hearing the glories of your Lordship. The Lord is all-pervading. As it is stated by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, everything is sustained by me, but at the same time I am not in everything. Since the Lord is all-pervading, there is nothing existing without his knowledge. The all-pervasive nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can never be within the limited knowledge of a living entity. Therefore, a person who has attained steadiness of the mind by fixing the mind on the lotus feet of the Lord is able to understand the Supreme Lord to some extent. It is the business of the mind to wander over varied subject matter for sense gratification. I repeat, it is the business of the mind to wander over varied subject matter for sense gratification. Therefore, only a person who always engages the senses in the service of the Lord can control the mind and be fixed at the lotus feet of the Lord. This concentration of the mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord is called samadhi. Until one reaches the stage of samadhi, or trance, he cannot understand the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There may be some philosophers or scientists who can study the cosmic nature from atom to atom. They may be so advanced that they can count the atomic composition of the cosmic atmosphere, or all the planets and stars in the sky, or even the shining molecular particles of the sun, or of the stars and other luminaries in the sky, but it is not possible to count the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As described in the beginning of the Vedanta Sutra, the Supreme Person is the origin of all qualities. He is generally called Nirguna. Nirguna means whose qualities are beyond estimation. Guna means quality, and nir means beyond estimation. But impersonalists interpret this word nirguna as having no quality, because they are unable to estimate the qualities of the Lord in transcendental realization. They conclude that the Supreme Lord has no qualities. But that is actually not the position. The real position is that he is the original source of all qualities. All qualities are emanating constantly from him. How, therefore, can a limited person count the qualities of the Lord? One may estimate the qualities of the Lord at one moment, but the next moment the qualities have increased, so it is not possible to make an estimation of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. He is therefore called Nirguna. One should not uselessly labor in mental speculation to estimate the Lord's qualities. There is no need of adopting the speculative method or exercising the body to attain mystic yoga perfection. One should simply understand that the distress and happiness of this body are predestined. There is no need to try to avoid the distress of this body, bodily existence, or to attempt to achieve happiness by different types of exercises. The best course is to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead with body, mind, and words, and always be engaged in his service. This transcendental labor is fruitful, but other attempts to understand the Absolute Truth are never successful. Therefore, an intelligent man does not try to understand the Absolute Truth by speculative or mystic power. Rather, he engages in devotional service and depends on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knows that whatever may happen to the body is due to his past sinful activities. If one lives such a simple life in devotional service, then automatically he inherits the transcendental abode of the Lord. Actually, every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and a son of the Godhead. Each has the natural right to inherit and share the transcendental pleasures of the Lord, but due to the contact of matter, conditioned living entities have been practically disinherited. If one adopts the simple method of engaging himself in devotional service, automatically he becomes eligible to be freed from material contamination and elevated to the transcendental position of associating with the Supreme Lord. Lord Brahma presented himself to Lord Krishna as the most presumptuous living creature because he wanted to examine the wonder of his personal power. He stole the boys and calves of the Lord in order to see how the Lord would recover them. Now Lord Brahma admitted that his attempts was most presumptuous, for he was attempting to test his energy before the person of original energy. Coming to his senses, Lord Brahma saw that although he was a very powerful living creature in the estimation of all other living creatures within this material world, his power was nothing in comparison with the power and energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The scientists of the material world have invented wonders such as atomic weapons, and when tested in a city or some insignificant place on this planet, such powerful weapons create so-called havoc. But in the atomic weapons, if the atomic weapons are tested on the sun, what is their significance? They are insignificant there. Similarly, Brahma's stealing of the calves and boys from Sri Krishna may be a wonderful display of mystic power. But when Sri Krishna exhibited his expansive power in so many calves and boys and maintained them without effort, Brahma could understand that his own power was insignificant. Brahma addressed Lord Krishna as Achyuta because the Lord is never forgetful of a little service rendered by his devotee. He is so kind and affectionate toward his devotees that a little service by them is accepted by him as a great deal. Brahma has certainly rendered much service to the Lord. As the Supreme Personality in charge of this particular universe, he is, without a doubt, a faithful servant of Krishna. Therefore, he could appease Krishna. He asked that the Lord understand him as a subordinate servant, whose little mistake and impudence might be excused. He admitted that he was puffed up by his powerful position as Lord Brahma, because he is the qualitative incarnation of the mode of passion within this material world. This was natural for him, and therefore he committed the mistake. But Lord Brahma hoped that since he was, after all, Lord Krishna's subordinate, the Lord would kindly take compassion upon him and excuse him for his gross mistake. Lord Brahma realized his actual position. He is certainly the supreme teacher of this universe in charge of the production of material nature, consisting of the complete material energy, false ego, sky, air, fire, water, and earth. Such a universe may be gigantic, but it can be measured just as we can measure our body as 7 spans. Generally, everyone's personal bodily measurement is calculated to be 7 spans of his hand. This particular universe may appear as a very gigantic body, but it is nothing but the measurement of 7 spans for Lord Brahma. Aside from this universe, there are unlimited other universes which are outside the jurisdiction of this particular Lord Brahma, just as innumerable atomic, infinitesimal fragments pass through the holes of a screened window, so millions and trillions of universes in their seedling form are coming out from the bodily pores of Mahavishnu, and that Mahavishnu is but a part of the plenary expansion of Krishna. Under these circumstances, although Lord Brahma is the supreme creature within this universe, what is his importance in the presence of Lord Krishna? Lord Brahma therefore compared himself to a little child within the womb of his mother. If the child within the womb plays with his hands and legs, and while playing touches the body of the mother, is the mother offended with the child? Of course she isn't. Similarly, Lord Brahma may be a very great personality, and yet not only Brahma, but everything that be is existing within the womb of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord's energy is all-pervading. There's no place in the creation where it is not acting. Since everything is existing within the energy of the Lord, the Brahma of this universe and the Brahmas of many other millions of and trillions of universes are existing within the energy of the Lord. Therefore, the Lord is considered to be the mother, and everything existing within the womb of the mother is considered to be the child. And the good mother is never offended with the child, even if he touches the body of the mother by kicking his legs. Lord Brahma then said that his birth was from the lotus flower which blossomed from the navel of Narayan after the dissolution of the three worlds, or the three planetary systems known as Bhurloka, Bhuvarloka, and Swargaloka, and Swarloka. The universe is divided into three divisions, namely Swarga, Martya, and Patala. These three planetary systems are merged into water at the time of dissolution. At that time, Narayan, a plenary portion of Krishna, lies down on the water, and gradually a lotus stem grows from his navel, and from that lotus flower, Brahma is born. It is naturally concluded that the mother of Brahma is Narayan, but the Lord is the resting place of all living entities after the dissolution of the universe. He is called Narayan, because the Lord is the resting place of all living entities after the dissolution of the universe. He is called Narayan. The word Nara means the aggregate total of all living entities, and Ayana means the resting place. The form of Garbhadakshay Vishnu is called Narayana because he rests himself on that water. In addition, he is the resting place of all living creatures. Besides that, Narayana is also present in everyone's heart, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. In that sense also, the Lord is Narayana, as Ayana means the source of knowledge, as well as the resting place. It is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that the remembrance of the living entity is due to the presence of the Supersoul within the heart. After changing the body, a living creature forgets everything of his past life. But because Narayan, the Supersoul, is present within his heart, he is reminded by him to act according to his past desire. Lord Brahma wanted to prove that Krishna is the original Narayan, that he is the source of Narayan, and that Narayan is not an exhibition of the external energy Maya, but is an expansion of spiritual energy. The activities of the external energy or Maya are exhibited after the creation of this cosmic world, and the original spiritual energy of Narayan was acting before the creation. So the expansions of Narayan, from Narayan to Karnadakshay Vishnu, from Karnadakshay Vishnu to Garbhadakshay Vishnu, from Garbhadakshay Vishnu to Shiradakshay Vishnu, and from Shiradakshay Vishnu to everyone's heart, are actually Krishna's expansions, manifestations of his spiritual energy. They are not conducted by the material energy, therefore they are not temporary. Anything conducted by the material energy is temporary, but everything executed by the spiritual energy is eternal. My dear Lord, in this incarnation you have proved that you are the supreme controller of Maya. You remain within the cosmic manifestation, and yet the whole creation is within you. This fact has already been proved by you when you exhibited the whole universal creation within your mouth before your mother, Yashoda. By your inconceivable potency of Yoga Maya, you can effect such things without external help. My dear Lord Krishna, the whole cosmic manifestation that we are visualizing at present is all within your body. Yet I am seeing you outside, and you are also seeing me outside. How can such things happen without being influenced by your inconceivable energy? Lord Brahma stressed herein that without accepting the inconceivable energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot explain things as they are. He continued, My dear Lord, leaving aside all other things and just considering today's happenings, what I have seen, are they not all due to your inconceivable energies? First of all, I saw you alone. Thereafter, you expanded yourself as your cowherd boyfriends, the calves, and the whole existence of Vrindavan. Then I saw you and all the boys and calves as four-handed Vishnus, and they were being worshipped by all elements and all demigods, including myself. Again, they were all wound up, and you remained alone, as you were before. Does this not mean that you are the Supreme Lord Narayan, the origin of everything, that everything emanates from you and again enters into you, leaving you the same as before? Persons who are unaware of your inconceivable energy cannot understand that you alone expand yourself as the creator, Brahma, the maintainer, Vishnu, and the annihilator, Shiva. Persons who are not in awareness of things as they are contemplate that I, Brahma, am the creator, Vishnu is the maintainer, and Lord Shiva is the annihilator. Actually, you alone are everything, creator, maintainer, and annihilator. Similarly, you expand yourself in different incarnations among the demigods. You incarnate as Vamandev. Among the great sages, you incarnate as Parushuram. Among the human beings, you appear as yourself, Lord Krishna, or as Lord Rama. Among the animals, you appear as the boar incarnation. And among the aquatics, you appear as the fish incarnation. And yet you have no appearance or disappearance. You are always eternal. Your appearance and disappearance are made possible by your inconceivable energy just to give protection to the faithful devotees and to annihilate the faithless demons. O my Lord, O all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, O Supersoul, controller of all mystic powers, no one can appreciate your transcendental pastimes as they are exhibited within the three worlds. No one can estimate how you have expanded your yoga maya and your incarnations and how you act by your transcendental energy. My dear Lord, this whole cosmic manifestation is just like a flashing dream, and its temporary existence simply disturbs the mind. As a result, we are full of anxiety in this existence. To live within this material world means simply to suffer and to be full of miseries. And yet this temporary existence of the material world appears to be pleasing and dear on account of its having evolved from your body, which is eternal and full of bliss and knowledge. My conclusion is, therefore, that you are the Supreme Soul, the Absolute Truth, and the Supreme Original Person. And although by your inconceivable transcendental potencies You have expanded yourself in so many Vishnu forms, and also in the living entities and other energies. You are the Supreme One without a second, the Supreme Supersoul. The innumerable living entities are simply like sparks of the original fire, your Lordship. The conception of the Supersoul as impersonal is wrong, because I see that you are the original person. Persons with a poor fund of knowledge may think that because you are the son of Maharaj Nanda, you are not the original person, that you are born just like a human being. They are mistaken. You are the actual original person. That is my conclusion. In spite of your being the son of Nanda, you are the original person, and there is no doubt about it. You are the absolute truth, and you are not of this material darkness. You are the source of the original Brahma Jyoti, as well as the material luminaries, the sun, moon, and stars. Your transcendental effulgence is identical with the Brahma Jyoti. As it is described in the Brahma Sanghita, the Brahma Jyoti is nothing but your personal bodily effulgence. There are many Vishnu incarnations and incarnations of your different qualities, but all these those incarnations are not on the same level. You are the original lamp. Other incarnations may possess the same candle power as the original lamp, but the original lamp is the beginning of all life. And because you are not one of the creations of this material world, even after the annihilation of this world, your existence, as you are, will continue. Because you are the original person, you are described in the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, as well as the Brahma Sanghita, as Govindamadi Purusham. Govinda is the original person, the cause of all causes. In the Bhagavad Gita also it is stated that you are the source of the Brahman effulgence. No one should conclude that your body is like an ordinary material body. Your body is akshara, indestructible. The material body is always full of threefold miseries, but your body is sakchit ananda vigraha, full of bliss, knowledge, and eternality. You are also niranjana because your pastimes, as the little son of Mother Yashoda or the lover of the gopis, are never contaminated by the material qualities. And although you exhibited yourself as so many cowherd boys and calves, your transcendental potency was not reduced. You are always complete. As it is described in the Vedic literature, even if the complete is taken away from the complete, the Supreme Absolute Truth, it remains the complete Supreme Absolute Truth. And although many expansions from the complete are visible, the complete is one without a second. Since all your pastimes are spiritual, there is no possibility of their being contaminated by the material modes of nature. When you place yourself as subordinate to your father and mother, Nanda and Yashoda, you are not reduced in your potency. This is an expression of your loving attitude toward your devotees. There is no second identity to compete with you. A person with a poor fund of knowledge concludes that your appearance and pastimes are simply material designations. You are transcendental to both nescience and knowledge, as it is confirmed in the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. You are the original Amrita, indestructible nectar of immortality, as confirmed in the Vedas, Amritam Shashvatam Brahma. Brahman is the eternal, the supreme origin of everything, who has no birth or death. In the Upanishads, it is stated that the Supreme Brahman is as effulgent as the sun and is the origin of everything, and that anyone who can understand that original person becomes liberated from material conditioned life. Anyone who can simply be attached to you by devotional service can know your actual position, birth, appearance, disappearance, and activities. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, simply by understanding your constitutional position, appearance and disappearance, one can immediately be elevated to the spiritual kingdom after quitting this present body. Therefore, to cross over the ocean of material nations, an intelligent person takes shelter of your lotus feet and is easily transferred to the spiritual world. There are many so-called meditators who do not know that you are the Supreme Soul. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, you are the Supreme Soul present in everyone's heart. Therefore, there is no necessity of one's meditating on something beyond you. One who is always absorbed in meditation on your original form of Krishna easily crosses over the ocean of material nations. But persons who do not know that you are the Supreme Soul remain within the material world in spite of their so-called meditation. If by the association of your devotees, a person comes to the knowledge that Lord Krishna is the original Supersoul, then it is possible for him to cross over the ocean of material ignorance. For instance, when a person mistakes a rope for a snake, he is filled with fear, but as soon as he understands that the rope is not a snake, he is liberated from fear. If one understands you, therefore, through your personal teachings, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, or through the teachings of your pure devotees, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam and all other Vedic scriptures, if one realizes that you are the ultimate goal of understanding, he need no longer fear this material existence. So-called liberation and bondage have no meaning for a person who is already engaged in your devotional service, just as a rope is not fearful to a person who knows that it is not a snake. A devotee knows that this material world belongs to you, and he therefore engages everything in your transcendental loving service. Thus, there is no bondage for him. For a person who is already situated in the sun planet, there is no question of the appearance or disappearance of the sun in the name of day or night. It is also said that you, Krishna, are just like the sun, and that Maya is like darkness. When the sun is present, there is no question of darkness. So, for those who always remain in your presence by engaging in your service, there is no question of bondage or liberation. They are already liberated. On the other hand, persons who falsely think themselves to be liberated without taking shelter of your lotus feet fall down because their intelligence is not pure. If one therefore thinks that the Supersoul is something different from your personality, and thus searches out the Supersoul or the Supreme Brahman somewhere else, in the forest or in the caves of the Himalayas, his condition is very lamentable. Your teachings in the Bhagavad Gita are that one should give up all other processes of self-realization and simply surrender unto you, for that is complete. Because you are the Supreme in every respect, those who are searching after the Brahman effulgence are also searching after you, and those who are searching after Supersoul realization are also searching after you. You state in the Bhagavad Gita that you yourself, by your partial representation as the Supersoul, have entered into the material cause of manifestation. You are present in everyone's heart, and there is no need to search out the Supersoul anywhere else. If someone does so, he is simply in ignorance. One who is transcendental to such a position understands that you are unlimited. You are both within and without. Therefore, your presence is everywhere. Instead of searching for the Supersoul anywhere else, a devotee only concentrates his mind on you within. Actually, one who is liberated from the material concept of life can search for you. Others cannot. The example of thinking the rope to be a snake is applicable only to those who are still in ignorance of you. Actually, when one mistakes a rope for a snake, the existence of the snake is only within the mind. The existence of Maya, similarly, is only within the mind. Maya is nothing but ignorance of your personality. When one forgets your personality, that is the conditioned state of Maya. Therefore, one who is fixed upon you, both internally and externally, is not illusioned. One who has attained a little result of devotional service can understand your glories. Even one striving for Brahman realization or Paramatma realization cannot understand these features of your personality unless you bestow upon him the result of at least a slight bit of devotional service. One may be the spiritual master of many impersonalists, or he may go to the forest or to a mountain cave and meditate as a hermit for many, many years, but he cannot understand your glories without being favored by a slight degree of devotional service. Brahman realization or Paramatma realization are also not possible after one searches for many, many years, unless one is touched by the wonderful effect of devotional service. And thus ends tonight's reading of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we'll finish tomorrow at the temple this wonderful chapter, The Prayers of Lord Brahma. And end, dot, dot, dot.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Guru Maharaj, for reading. Wonderful reading. It was very enjoyable. It was short, but very, very interesting.
Jai.
So, with your permission, should I open the lines, Maharaj?
Please.
Thank you.
Can everyone please say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
God Premanande Haribo.
Hare Hare Hare
Hare
Hare
Hare
Hare
Hare
Hare
Hare Krishna.